Hey everyone, and welcome back to Scorncast, the official podcast of the Pop Scorn movie blog, which you can visit at scornpop.blogspot.com. This is Jasper, your host, and Ghostface Milla is here so we can finish what we started 1 year ago. That's right, all our Cullen family frenemies have returned to the big screen. There's Bella, Edward, the computer-generated baby who's engaged to that wolf fella. So let's go ahead and jump right into our discussion of the Twilight Saga Breaking Dawn Part 2, which we agree really ends the Twilight franchise with a bang. Oh, I'm sorry, I read that wrong. I meant to say bung.
You're still here.
So are you. I didn't expect you to seem so... you? Except for the creepy eyes.
I would keep my distance for now.
It's safer for the baby to see how you do with me first.
Since when do you care about Renesmee?
Alright. Take a whiff.
So, Ghostface, I understand that there's something that I asked you to say.
yes, there is.
Yeah, so, do you want to say it?
Oh yeah, my name is actually Paul.
Yeah, so I fully admit that this was something I brought up with you in email the other day. I think you originally went by Ghostface Milla on this podcast because at the time we started, you were writing for a music blog under that code name.
Yeah.
And I thought it made Scorncast seem so much more legitimate if we carried over that identity, because then I could be like, oh, here's Ghostface Milla from the Roundtable music blog. So, yeah. But you're not blogging anymore, and I wanted to start directing folks to our Twitter in the podcast, and I thought it would be kind of weird and awkward for me to say that the Twitter of Ghostface Milla was Pauly Milla. And that is your Twitter, by the way, so that's where you can follow Paul, Pauly Milla, PauliMillah, because it's inevitably going to be misspelled by people that just hear it without it being spelled. Mine, by the way, is Jasper Frowns, because I do frown regularly at most things. But now that's settled, and I'd like to officially welcome Paul to Scorncast for the first time. So
hello.
Welcome, Paul. This could have been more artfully handled if we were reviewing a superhero movie instead of a Twilight film.
Right. You know, if you think about it, Bella reveals her true self.
Oh.
Finally, after all these years, she comes into her own.
Oh my God.
And I feel that is what I have just done.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you're also pushing me way off script. But well, we could have done a whole bit in the beginning of this episode about how, like, superheroes have secret identities, and so does Ghostface Milla or whatever. And we could have tied it into the discussion there. But we're reviewing a Twilight film, so let's review a Twilight film. So, I guess we definitely remember, I hope everybody else remembers that's listening to this, that we reviewed Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 1 a year ago. The first thing I wanted to talk to you about and get your read on was, I remember a year ago when we talked about that movie, I feel like I kind of maybe had to, like, strong-arm you into seeing it, right?
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily the easiest decision.
Yeah. But it turns out that Breaking Dawn Part 2, you actually saw it without me even, like, like calling you or texting you and being like, hey, we should really finish what we started a year ago. Yeah, I actually found out that you saw it, like, via text message where you were just like, oh my God, just saw Twilight. And I was like, wow, that's great. I mean, it's nice that we're just doing this thing on autopilot, but
because
I really thought, like, I was getting to the point that weekend where I was like, I really need to bring up to Paul that we are probably needing to do this movie.
Well, I think it was more that, like, I had already invested this time, mm-hmm. so it was so much easier to see this one.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, one of my good friends, was just like, hey, you know, we ended up seeing the first one together. She was like, I had so much fun sitting next to you and just, like, hearing all of you, like, being like, oh, are you serious? Like, are they kidding with this? Like, and just saying all that stuff throughout the whole movie and just, like, you know, snickering. And I mean, there's so many parts in the first one and so many parts in this one, we sort of just, like, lost our shit. But, so, yeah, I was sort of like, yeah, I would love to do that. I was like, let's have brunch beforehand. Let's have a few mimosas or something. And then go see Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 2.
Let's make a day of it.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. So people probably don't need too much of a recap. I mean, there's not much to recap, right, in this saga?
That's the thing with these movies, like, nothing really ever happens, and even things that do happen don't happen with, like, any sort of sense of, like, finality that you remember them. you know, like the stuff that you can tell is like straight from the books is very uneventful, even though they like will talk it up before it happens and stuff like that. Certain scenes will sort of be like, did they really need that? Like so many other things are explained with dialogue, and then they just had this scene that felt like a throwaway. But apparently to everyone that has read the book, they're like, oh, thank God they're doing this scene. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, what? Like, you know, like I think Bella like meets this guy at like this restaurant and they like talk it up for like a second. And he's like, he's like a bigger character in the book. And I was just sort of like, that was the whole scene. She gets an envelope and she sort of like looks off into the distance. Like, I don't know. There's certain scenes and, you know, just things that happen in this movie that are, they're such non things to be highlighted.
And so just to be clear, you're talking about Jay Jenks.
Yes.
And
I forgot his stupid name.
And for people who don't know, or who didn't see this movie yet, or just listening to this for the laughs, which hopefully we will bring, Jay Jenks, I'm not talking about like J-A-Y Jenks, I'm talking about J period Jenks.
Yeah.
Right? Because for some reason they can't give him a name. He just goes by the initial J, which is just like a really specific detail to me in this that stands out and is just really kind of weird, and I don't get it at all. But I guess, you know, that's what he was called in the books, so he will be J Jenks in the movie. It's just weird because for that like one sequence, Bella kind of turns into like a secret agent.
Right.
Like she's meeting this like shady guy in a restaurant and he hands her an envelope and we're getting like way ahead of ourselves, but
I mean really we're not though.
Like, we're not, no.
Like stuff happens before then. Actually we should definitely talk about what happens before then.
Yeah, I guess we should say that this series is based on a series of books written by Stephenie Meyer.
Wait, you did air quotes when you said written by, right?
Yeah, yes. I was okay. Definitely air quoting.
just checking. I couldn't sense.
This podcast is going to be full of air quotes, probably, but we should have like a chime or something that plays every time yes. I finger quote. It'd get really annoying, probably. But yeah, it's written by Stephenie Meyer. The fourth book has been split up into two movies, sort of like what they did with Harry Potter. But yeah. I feel like where Harry Potter, that was a pretty dense book that was like kind of full of things happening.
Yeah, I think they sort of like focused on two very specific tones and moods, which sort of necessitated two films that like interweaved, you know?
Yeah.
And these ones are just like, they're just like long, rambly, and then this happened, and then this happened, and then this happened.
We can actually like talk about this love triangle between, here we go, Bella, who's a dipshit, she is, sorry, and then Edward, who's also kind of a dipshit, but he's a vampire dipshit as opposed to the human dipshit that Bella is, and then there's Jacob, who is at the third corner of this dipshit triangle. He is not a vampire, he's not a human, he's a shapeshifter. I think a lot of people mistake him for being a werewolf, but he happens to be like a Native American shapeshifter who only shapeshifts into wolves. And also, all these book titles and movie titles have to do with the moon, so I guess you would be forgiven for thinking that he is a werewolf. I don't know why I went off on that tangent, but for a second there, I feel like I turned into a Twilight fan.
But I think it does prove just, like, the randomness of certain details.
Yeah.
And how, like, you would think it's sort of this way, but it's this way. And not in, like, a, oh, I see what you did there. It's more of, like, a, but why? Like, you know, it's, like, it's a frustrating sort of discovery to be, like, wait, he's not a fucking werewolf? Like, are you serious? You know?
Right, yeah. But yeah, there's this love triangle, which was kind of resolved in the last movie. Now Bella and Edward are married. Definitely, I want to refer people to that two-part Scorncast, which is actually, it's the second and third most popular Scorncasts that we've ever done.
Nice.
So we were doing something right. The most popular Scorncast that we've ever done is Don't Be Afraid of the Dark, which I still... Oh. I can't explain. That one's very popular in Europe, though. So many hits from Europe on that episode. But yeah, so people can listen to that if they want to hear us go on and on about that. You know, that movie, we didn't like it. It was basically 117 minutes of two people who neither of us really gave a shit about preparing for their wedding, getting married, going on their honeymoon, becoming pregnant, and having a baby. And now, granted, that pregnancy is fraught with complications, so I don't mean to oversimplify the movie, but if you don't care, you don't care. And there's just so much in that first half of that movie that I found problematic on... not just like a cinematic level, but a human level. You know what? I'm going to let people revisit that episode if they want to hear us talk about all that. I obviously still have strong feelings about how gross that movie is. But this one picks up almost, I guess, immediately after Bella has had this baby chewed out of her stomach by her vampire husband.
Yes.
And she lost so much blood in that whole procedure, he had to save her by making her into a vampire, which is cool because that's what, I guess, she wanted anyway, right?
Yeah, I feel like that's the inevitable conclusion of most, like, human vampire loves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you gotta give it up. I didn't even mean it like that, but that is also what this series is going for.
Basically, repression eventually is rewarded.
Mm-hmm. So the movie opens with Bella, who now is a vampire. She's a newborn vampire, so she's super strong. Yeah. And we're treated almost immediately to, like, these endless sequences of her doing things that normal people can do, but just much faster.
Faster, crazier, in a blue miniskirt dress.
Oh my god, yeah. Who put her in that cocktail dress?
I don't know, but she rock climbs in it.
Like, she does,
no,
yeah.
With no shoes on or anything. She, like, runs up the side of a mountain.
I feel like when she was dying on the delivery table, I guess it was kind of like a kitchen table that she just happened to be delivering on, but she was wearing, like, kind of, like, cardigans and stuff. Like,
yeah, she
jeans
was wearing, like, sweats, like, yoga pants. And, yeah. Like, you know, baggy hoodies.
So when you become a vampire, you have to dress really classy, like Ann Coulter. So, so she's in this blue cocktail dress. She wakes up and, you know, vampires in pop culture and movies and television shows, they have this really stupid thing that they do where they, like, speed run or glide run or whatever. Yeah. I've given up hope in terms of, like, the vampire fascination ending. But I just hope, like, if I can say anything to the people that are producing movies and television shows, enough with, like, the glide running, because they do it on True Blood, they do it here. It never looks right. It always looks really fake and really cheesy. I don't think the technology is there yet. I mean, maybe if this thing had a bigger budget, that's a whole other discussion that we could have. Like, why do these things not have huge budgets? Because they're going to make a shitload of money. Like, a lot of people are going to see these movies. It doesn't make sense to me that they don't have better vampire running, right? Am I dwelling? Is it fair?
I think they spent so much of their CG budget on creating that friggin' baby. And I honestly think that, like, every scene, other than the very end, but, like, the intro scene, any of the speed running and the changing into a wolf and all that stuff, like, they just look so, like, hacked together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, really, really bad green screen plus this. And, I think, you know, and she tackles that, like, mountain lion. Oh, like, it was, God. Like, laughable.
Yeah.
Like, I'm pretty sure most even, like, diehard fans in the theater were sort of like, ha, like, that looked awful.
Yeah, it's become, like, a GIF moment on the internet. Like, the, like, animated GIF was all over blogs when the first trailer came out, and I don't know if that's a thing from the book that they adapted. I would assume so, since everything except the ending, which we'll get to probably, is directly lifted from the book, because there's so much, like, extraneous stuff that I can only assume is in this movie because they were worried about the fans being like, wait a minute, you know, they changed that. They changed this for the movie. But yeah, she wakes up and her gorgeous vampire husband, Edward, starts talking to her about how sexy she is. And all she wants to do is see her baby, Renesmee. But Edward's like, no, no, Bella, you have to go feed first. And so he takes her out, which I don't, does that even make sense? Like, what were they implying there, that she would try to eat her baby?
Yeah, basically.
Oh, okay. Cool.
I know, right? One shining moment.
Yeah, so he takes her out to feed. I think he's having her, like, hunt for animals, because the Cullen family, which Edward is a part of, he's part of this huge vampire family. They are vegetarian vampires, which I know I brought up in the other Scorncast we did for Breaking Dawn Part 1, that just, you know, calling them vegetarian vampires bothers me, because it just shows Stephanie Meyer's complete lack of understanding of vegetarianism.
They're more like pescatarian vampires.
Yeah. Yeah, they go after the forest animals, because they live in the Pacific Northwest, so tons of varmints around, and also deer, I guess, which is what she starts to go for. But then she smells like a mountain climber, and she's like, oh, I want to eat this mountain climber, right? And then she gets distracted by a mountain lion. It's weird, because the whole series up until now, I feel like, has kind of been parlaying this whole idea that curbing your appetite for humans is something that requires a lot of effort and work, and is very hard for vampires to do, but she doesn't really seem to have that problem.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I mean, convenience. Yeah. All I gotta say.
Well, but I mean, you know, hey, let's be honest. Then if she ate the mountain climber, then we would actually be spared that wonderful moment where she tackles a mountain lion in a blue cocktail dress. So yay, right? So she meets her baby, which you alluded to earlier, saying that you think that they spent a lot of their money on that. I just want to make one thing clear, though. You're not by any means saying that you think that this baby looked like a very expensive CG creation, right?
No, I think they had to pay a lot of money to the people that created that baby for the internet when it first started, because that baby looked like the Ooga Chaka baby from, like, the Ally McBeal show. Like, yeah. It looked so bad.
Yeah.
And they had to give it, like, red eyes and, like, facial features that, like, recognize people and, like, make faces. Like, it should have just been breakdancing. It should have just been, like, they just take it all the way and make it this super crazy baby.
Mm. Yeah.
It was awful.
It's really awful. It's just kind of horrifying looking. I'm not a fan of babies in general, but, like, the fact that this one is created by pixels didn't really help. I guess also, what I read about this Renesmee baby is that they took the young actress that plays Renesmee later in the movie and sort of grafted her facial features, not like physically, we should say.
Right.
This little girl still looks great, but they took her face digitally and like put it on this CG baby. Because I guess the whole idea is that this baby, since it was conceived when Edward was a vampire and Bella was a human and is now like a hybrid human vampire baby, is cognizant of the environment in ways that they couldn't get a normal baby to do, like, on film. I didn't really get that. Like, I got that more from reading about what this is supposed to be than seeing it in the movie. It just seems like the baby is drunk.
They didn't do that onto a real baby. Like, that's what was awful. I mean, it would have been bad either way, but this was worse because, like, the hairs on its head were fake, the way that it, like, turned its head and everything about that was fake. I would have rather had, like, oh, here's, like, some intense eyes that are slightly different and, like, eyebrow movements, you know, that are a little bit more adult or, like, understanding than a newborn.
Right.
But it just ended up looking like this E-Trade baby.
Yeah.
Like, it just looked real dumb, just super fake all over.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it made the E-Trade baby look really good.
Yeah. And also, like, there's so many scenes where Robert Pattinson, who plays Edward, is supposed to be holding this baby. The shadowing doesn't look right. It's just all really, really weird. I don't know.
He's clearly holding, like, a blue bag of sand.
Right.
And, like, you can tell that he knows that he's holding a blue bag of sand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, basically, because this baby is a human-vampire hybrid, which, according to the first movie, is, like, unprecedented in human-vampire history.
They can't Google anything about it.
No. I think we should probably mention really quickly Robert Pattinson, who sort of in promotion of these movies seems just over it completely, has said as much. I know specifically in one case, it almost seemed to me like he listened to our Scorncast about Breaking Dawn Part 1 because he was like, who uses Google image search to look up what is going on with their wife's pregnancy?
Right.
Yeah. But because Renesmee is a human vampire hybrid, she ages at a very rapid rate. So I guess, I don't know if we get a specific timeline on this or not, but I would say like a couple months pass from her birth and she already kind of seems like she's like 4 years old or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Then we have this whole issue where Bella is frolicking with Renesmee in a snowy field. And Renesmee, I guess, can fly?
What the fuck here? Like, okay, we'll get into, like, powers a little bit later, probably, because people have random powers that, like, make no sense and are more X-Men-y than, like, vampire mythology.
Right.
I know, like, these vampires can run and jump really high, but she doesn't, like, jump. She, like, glides.
I called her Hover Kid.
Yeah, she hovered, totally, and, like, caught a snowflake in the air and then, like, lowered herself down slowly. It was so bizarre. I was like, wait, what? And then she never did that again, right?
Yeah, she never used her hover powers ever again. I don't know.
Weird.
Flatulent child. Vampire human hybrid farts are different. Right. Stephanie Meyer probably has like a whole section of her website devoted to like vampire human fart physiology or something like that. Because she does have one about DNA and how it's possible for a vampire to conceive a baby with a human because of like the DNA and the chromosome count is different. Like she has thought this out, and by thinking it out, I mean she has not thought this out at all.
Right.
But
she Google image searches.
While Hover Kid grabs this snowflake, I'm just going to start calling her hover kid because it's less stupid than Renesmee.
Than Renesmee, totally.
Lurking nearby on a cliff on top of a mountain is the Cullen's cousin, Irina, played by Maggie Grace. Irina sees this hover kid and immediately she jumps to the conclusion that Bella and Edward have changed like a four-year-old into a vampire, like a human into vampire transition, which is really a bad thing for vampires to do. So she goes to Italy, because of course she does,
right,
to talk to the Volturi, who you might remember from other movies, are like this governing class of vampires. I guess they're kind of like the lawmakers and regulators. And it's really weird because our only other exposure to vampires in the series is this Cullen family that live in the Pacific Northwest, and they all kind of look like they just stepped off the pages of a Land's End catalog.
Right.
And then the Volturi are kind of like crazy, ridiculous, stereotypical vampires that look like vampires did back like in the Bela Lugosi Dracula movies and that kind of thing.
Yeah. They're like the Vampire Vatican.
Yeah, that's actually a very good way to put it. The one sequence that I thought was really cool kind of comes halfway through the movie when they're sort of explaining why it is historically not allowed that vampires turn small children into vampires. Because this kind of thing has happened in the past, and when you have a small child, you know, their impulses are very hard to control, and all they want to do is like run around and fuck shit up. So you basically have, you know, a small vampire monster that doesn't understand the things that like an older vampire would understand. So there's this flashback to like this old, like, I don't know, Frankenstein village kind of thing, like,
yeah,
to this little kid who's become a vampire, and you see him with like blood all over his face, and the image of that was so like weirdly striking to me, standing out from anything we've ever seen in this series before. But the Volturi roll into this town and they know what they have to do. They have to kill this child because there's no way to control it. So they just toss it onto a bonfire.
Yeah.
I was just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely more Anne Rice than Stephanie Meyer. Mm. Like, the way, just everything about that, the time period, the look, the creepiness, you know, blood on a child and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. It just did, yeah. And I actually enjoyed that part, too. I totally forgot about it until you said something. But yeah.
It was blocked out by all the nonsense.
Right, yeah. But that was, like, the super Aryan tribe. Like, all those women, and they even, what's her name, was one of them.
Yeah, from Denali? Where?
Yeah, why not?
What is Denali? Is that like Alaska or something?
That's like a Subaru or like a SUV or
it
something.
It does sound like a car.
Yeah. No, I'm pretty sure it is a car.
Oh, it is. Well, it's another corporate synergy kind of thing. See, they got a lot of money from the car industry to pay for all those crappy vampire baby effects that they did.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, this is a good time to bring up my three huge problems with this movie, which, you know, are in addition to all the little stupid things I hated that we'll talk about and belabor as well. The first thing I want to say is this story is sort of prefaced by an event that I really didn't understand, which is the Maggie Grace thing. We'll talk about that. Two, the film revolves entirely around a new character who exists only to have a film revolve around her. And right. Then I would say, like, the third thing is the plot resolution pretty much falls out of the sky. Or, if you prefer, walks out of the forest.
Right.
But yeah, this Maggie Grace thing, like, she's their cousin, yet she sees them and misunderstands the situation and immediately goes to the Volturi when she could have just, like, come up to them and been like, hey, what's going on with this vampire baby, right?
Right.
Like, we don't know enough about this character. She was introduced in the last movie, I think. She was, like, a wedding guest of theirs.
Uh-huh.
I just didn't know enough about her or her relationship to the Cullens to kind of get why she would react like this.
Yeah, it doesn't really... I mean, like most stuff in this movie, like certain things are blown out of proportion, other things are completely glossed over. There's really like no consistency. And this is one of those things that's like, oh, well, it's convenient for the plot for her to misunderstand things and not really get involved, so... Like, that's it.
Yeah, because she goes there and tells them, and Michael Sheen plays Arrow, who's like this lead Volturi, and I actually think, you know, in a movie of just mostly Drek, Michael Sheen is like a shining star, because I think he might be one of the only people in the cast that understands exactly what kind of movie that he's acting in. He's very campy, and like his fingers are always like arched, and you know, he's very intrigued by this development, so he's like, well, clearly we have to go to Forks, Washington, and kill everyone, because they have violated the breaks law, and the Cullen family is protecting them. And Alice, who is Edward Cullen's sister, she's played by Ashley Green. She is a psychic vampire who can see the future, which, you know, comes back to your whole thing about how each of these vampires have, like, X-Men powers.
Yeah, that for just no, randomly, for no real explanation.
For no reason other than, like, they need to have these things because they serve a purpose in the plot. But,
basically, yeah.
But, yeah, she has this vision that the Volturi are going to come to their town. What is it, when the snow sticks to the ground?
Yeah, I don't... It sort of rhymed or something, right? Like,
yeah, it was very Shakespearean in its eloquence. It was, instead of just saying, like, yeah, when it snows for the first time, like in December or whatever, I don't know. But yeah, Alice is like, they're going to be here when the snow sticks to the ground, which is pretty vague. Like, if you think that a vampire army is coming to visit you and wipe you all out, I feel like you would need to be a little bit more explicit in your visions, maybe.
Yeah, like, maybe like, oh, it's 6 p.m. on Tuesday.
Yeah, but I mean, what kind of visions is she having? Is her vision telling her, oh, the snow is sticking to the ground? Because I feel like if she just saw a vision of a bunch of vampires fighting on, like, a snowy field, that snow could have been there for a while.
Yeah, that could be, like, in 3 years from now. Like, yeah. It snows all the time.
Yeah, and vampires don't age, so she can't use, like, facial features.
Exactly.
See?
So-and-so looked a little bit older.
Right.
You'll never know.
So that's her prophecy. And the whole movie sort of then hinges on the Cullen family gathering up witnesses, which I thought was a very interesting choice of words, to sort of come to them. And I guess they're called witnesses because they need to observe Renesmee in her natural environment and realize that she is a vampire-human hybrid and not like a vampire child. And once they see that, they'll be able to testify, I guess, with the Volturi, like when they come to town and say, no, this isn't what you think it is. Even though Arrow, when he touches people, he knows their truths and their history and all that stuff. So the whole thing just seems like all these powers that people have contradict everything else that's going on in the story. It just seems like this could have been solved so quickly and there would have been no movie at all. But here we go. My whole beef with Renesmee, my second point that I made about how, for all the action centering around the existence of this kid, she doesn't really ever speak. She doesn't do much of anything except exist and have people fighting over her. I mean, in that way, I guess she's a lot like her mother.
Right. Sort of a non-entity.
Yeah.
That has a much to do around her.
But she spends most of the movie sort of like cowering behind either Kristen Stewart or Taylor Lautner, who plays Jacob. Like, she's not really there at all. You know, it would have been nice if we understood what all this was about.
Yeah, I mean, at least, like, if she had sort of revealed, you know, that she had a power that was sort of like...
Well, she could hover.
I thought there was something else she could do by touching you.
She's, like, super cognizant, and when another vampire touches her at one point in the movie, she transmits her thoughts to that vampire, maybe?
Oh, so everyone can kind of transmit thoughts. Okay, great. Well, yeah, I mean, she didn't really, like, have any sort of, like... larger role in the story other than, like, exactly you said, like, just existing.
Yeah.
But I was expecting her to have something, because I feel like even Bella was revealed to have some sort of, like, interesting power thing.
She's got a couple, actually.
Yeah, I mean, she can, what was it, she could project her own sort of shield onto other people.
She's basically like Invisible Woman, except without being invisible, unless you mean figuratively. That's what Jessica Alba did in those Fantastic Four movies. Like, she could project kind of, like, her force outward of her body and protect people and stuff like that. Bella can also, like, mentally block the powers of other vampires. In the end of the movie, as we find out, she has one additional power, which I want to get to maybe near the end of our discussion here, but...
Oh, yeah. That's my favorite power of all.
It's so arbitrary. Oops, we did it again. We talked too much about a Twilight movie. So we're going to pause there and finish our discussion of Breaking Dawn Part 2 on the next episode of Scorncast. But until then, you can check out past episodes at scornpop.blogspot.com. You can email us at scornpop@gmail.com. You can find Paul on Twitter at paulimilla, that's paulimillah. And you can find me on Twitter at Jasper Frowns. Now I'm off to use Google Image Search as God intended to find amazing Twilight Renesmee fan art. Seriously, the 8th result. You'll die.